to turn or not to turn? That's the question for Ace as he struggles with his character's situation and finds himself at a crossroads. Meanwhile, Jack brings in a veteran to boost ticket sales, Rooster's desire for a push continues to grow, and Stacy has a girls' night at the Duffy Dome. We're talking Heels Season 1, Episode 3 on Pro Wrestling Repackaged. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Chris.
And my name is Tessa.
And this is Pro Wrestling Repackaged, where the squared circle meets the small screen. In this episode, we will be discussing Heels Season 1, Episode 3, Cheap Heat, directed by Jessica Lowry and written by Bradley Paul. And we're just going to dive right in this week.
So in this episode, we have Jack trying to drum up more heat. So he enlists the help of a wrestling veteran, Ricky Rabies, which is setting up Ace with a full house for his comeback match against one of my favorite wrestlers, Bobby Pin.
Oh, Bobby Pin. Let me tell you, that guy really won me over in this episode.
He's so great.
His biggest victory to date, I think.
And he wrote his own theme, which I love.
Yes, which we also need to be, we need that released in full. So Heels team, get on that.
We've heard Jack's theme enough. We've heard his hardcore Holly music enough. Let's get Bobby Pins.
Yes. Yeah, actually, I want just an entire Spotify playlist with everyone's theme because we've yet to hear most of them. So I'm very curious about what the music is for, you know, a guy like Rooster or, you know, other people. We've heard Ace's theme, I feel like, 27 times already in 3 episodes. It gets stuck in my head, like, for hours and hours after we watch these episodes. So I'd like to hear what everyone else's theme music is.
Well, Heels does release Spotify playlists after episodes.
Do they?
I do, yeah, with the show's theme. I think there's, you know, Jack and Ace's theme on there. Stacy's song. So I bet if it's not out already, Bobby Pins will probably be there soon.
I will definitely be checking that out. I'll probably just have to listen to Ace's theme a bunch of times just to get it actually out of my head, just to get the earworm gone. One thing I do want to say, though, is the main theme song for Heels, you know, we talked about in the first episode, we weren't as big of fans of it. I think even now, just in episode 3, I'm starting to understand why that's the theme song. And it's starting to make a little bit more sense to me, especially with this episode. I think this was the best episode yet, but it's also the one with the most shocking scene thus far with, you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it, I don't know why you're listening to this, but we see in the beginning, Tom the King Spade shooting himself in the head. And it was very jarring and very disturbing. And it kind of came out of nowhere. He has this whole scene where he's jogging and saying hello to all the people in town and doing chores, cutting the lawn, fixing a sign. And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
it's very, very jarring, very disturbing. And then it cuts right to the opening theme. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, at least this is tonally
right.
appropriate right now.
Yeah, but this episode, like, really upset me. I know it's a drama and, you know, horrible things will happen in dramas, but I was really not prepared for that beginning. You know, I guess it's necessary for the storyline, but I felt like I really needed a warning because, you know, Jack in a previous episode said his dad killed himself, but I thought he just meant that he, like, worked himself too hard and died. Like, yeah. You know, just working way too hard with the business, with wrestling, whatever. I didn't think that he really killed himself.
That's something that I had been kind of glossing over up to this point because I figured, well, yeah, we'll get a reveal about that later on. So didn't want to dive into too much speculation about what happened there because the show wasn't ready for that yet.
Right.
And it still seems like the show's not ready for it. It's just like, well, here's what you need to know so far.
I wasn't ready for it.
But it did play into something that happens later on in the episode, which is, I guess, why we got it here. And I'll be interested to see what the follow-up is like, because where do you go from that? Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, I think this is the best episode yet. And that has a lot to do with everything that happened, you know, in between the very beginning, which is very shocking, and the very end, which kind of ends on a somber note. But the next thing that we did get after that very shocking opening was more boobs to start off the show, which it seems like there's just some sort of mandate. It's like, well, every episode must start with boobs.
Oh, yeah. Bobby at the strip club. Yeah. Yes. And that and every single episode. Look, I love Crystal. I think she's amazing. But as much as I love her, I don't need to see her naked every single episode.
Well, from listening to her on Robbie Ramos's podcast, which he's been interviewing all of his fellow castmates on Heels, and she was just on there this past week, and apparently she had done a show before this where she played some sort of cam girl or something like that. So she mentioned that she's actually very comfortable with all the nudity. Now, I'd be interested to see how Chris Bauer actually feels about all the nudity that he has been he has been made to do on this show, because he's naked just as much, I feel like, as Crystal.
He is. I think he's really enjoying it. He seems to be having a whole lot of fun with this character. Well, so
good for him. You know, all the characters really are starting to become naturally more fleshed out, and we're getting more of a sense of all their personalities. I mean, that's a natural thing. It's episode 3. We're getting to see more of them. I feel like a weird thing that's happening, though, in this episode and, like, throughout the course of the episodes is that Jack has just become way more likable and, like, he seemed more hardened in episode 1, and as the episodes have gone on, he's kind of softening, like he's thawing out, while Ace keeps further descending into jerkdom, which is pretty wild considering that the first episode ends with Jack shooting on Ace and the Duffy screw job, which is Jack's fault. But is it really? Is it really his fault?
Well, we said in the first episode, Ace screwed Ace. I mean, it's really his fault for everything.
Well, I mean, I was also saying that in jest, doing the Vince McMahon line.
But he did.
It's pretty wild that Jack has come out the more likable person in this whole situation, just considering where we started. But speaking of likable, I feel like also the guys in the locker room, they've been likable from square one, but they were really fun in this episode, I thought. Their hijinks with everyone getting iced.
Yeah, you're starting to see them just as kind of friends now. So, you know, I've always liked them. I'm liking Jack a little more with each episode. I don't think those guys are going to screw anything up for me. I think they're going to be perfect all the way throughout.
And, you know, the thing that I really love, and we'll talk about it, is Rooster getting a little bit more to sink his teeth into. Mm-hmm. From the get-go, I was immediately drawn to his character. So the fact that he's going to be a bit more pivotal than you would expect at first, you know, for any of the guys in the locker room, that he's going to be kind of a pivotal character here, at least I hope, is something that I really enjoyed about this episode. And overall, I just think it was a fun episode that was made even more fun by the fact that CM Punk was in it. His appearance as Ricky Rabies, I thought it elevated an already enjoyable episode. And I think this is my favorite one so far. I don't know how you feel.
I think I'm just still kind of in shock from the opening scene that I'm still trying to just, like, absorb it. Because it was really just jarring for me.
Right.
So it kind of took me out of the rest of the episode because I just couldn't get over what I saw. And then when we rewatched it, I was like, I can't look.
Yeah.
That's just been my issue so far. But, I mean, I still think this was a really strong episode, all things considered. And yeah, I think CM Punk did really great in his role. I loved seeing more of Bobby Pin. So I'm excited to see where it will go from here.
Agreed. Well, we did get introduced to Ricky Rabies and Vicky Rabies in this episode. And we also got introduced to, as we mentioned, Tom the King Spade officially for the first time. And then we also were introduced to Eddie and Annie Earle, which are the benefactors slash religious people, which is their personalities, that they're religious and they have a business with a terrible jingle in this episode. So we met some new characters. So let's just kind of talk about them one by one real briefly before we dive into the main story here. So let's talk a little bit about Ricky Rabies right now, played by CM Punk, Phil Brooks, the man lighting the industry on fire right now. And he's popping a big crowd for the Duffy Wrestling League. The first thing I want to say about Ricky Rabies is that it is almost chilling to see CM Punk without tattoos.
It is very bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't always have, like, his entire self covered, but it has been a long time since I have seen a almost baby-looking CM Punk, although he's portrayed to be very old.
Right.
at least older in this character, but it's weird.
Yeah, he posted an Instagram video of like the process of covering the tattoos. And at first I couldn't figure out what the video was. And then I was like, wait, the more I looked at it, I was like, wait, no, there's no tattoos. That's what's happening here.
Not only the tattoos, but the hair.
His hair.
On Ricky Rabies. And apparently that's all Punk's actual hair. So who knew? That's what he was slicking back all these years.
It's an interesting look.
So the Rabies Nation, as Vicky Rabies, his valet / mistress, alerts us to the fact that there's such a thing as the Rabies Nation, and they stoke the rabidity. It's a whole thing. It's a whole production. It actually kind of reminds me of Broken Matt Hardy in a way.
Yeah, because of the drone.
With the drone and just the whole, like,
bringing the whole family
the special chant. Yeah, bringing the whole family in. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that was kind of a little bit of an influence there. But Ricky Rabies himself, first of all, Punk with a southern accent, it kind of sounds like he's trying to do a bad Austin impression at times, which it makes it even funnier. But Ricky Rabies is a funny character. It's just kind of absurd and ridiculous in the best possible way for pro wrestling. But the thing that surprised me about him the most is that he's actually a really nice guy, and I kind of expected more of a jerk.
Yeah. You'd think that he'd be this really rough, obnoxious, annoying southern dude.
Right? Or just for a veteran wrestler.
Yeah.
To be kind of cranky and ornery and come in and make all these demands. But he's really appreciative of the DWL booking him. He mentions that to Jack. You know, I really appreciate you helping me put food on the table. Like, that's like a very genuine guy. And he just seems very, very positive.
Yeah, but we do know that he's, like, cheating on his wife. So I don't like that.
Well, I mean,
in front of his son. Considering
the things that we've learned about Bob Ross over the past week.
I'm not happy.
I still love Bob. But yeah, Ricky Rabies, a very entertaining character. I certainly hope this is not the last that we see of him. I hope he gets booked again in season one. I hope we get to see Ricky Rabies again. And Vicky Rabies as well, we mentioned, played by Bonnie Somerville. She is Ricky Rabies' valet and mistress. And she plays an important part in this episode because she kind of has this connection to Crystal. Maybe kind of a reluctant one for Crystal, just kind of trying to show her the ropes of, hey, here's how you be a really good valet and take care of your wrestler so you can have longevity in this industry.
Yeah, I didn't like her interactions with Crystal very much because we know, we'll get into this a little later, but we know Crystal is so much more than a valet. So it just bothers me because it's still like back in that like 80s, 90s mindset that I really don't understand.
And not that there's anything wrong with being a valet, just in the same way that there's nothing wrong with being a manager.
Right.
You know, being a non-wrestler. But to be pigeonholed into that and have no say and have no agency and not be able to say, no, I actually want to work. That is the plight that Crystal is faced with here in this first season that we are seeing. And I really feel like this is the tipping point for her of like, no. I cannot let this happen to me. I cannot just be this. She tries. We see her trying. We see her trying to get, you know, rub the oil on Ace and give him the massage. And she even calms him down with a little whoopee in the middle of the episode after he gets booed at, after he gets booed and tissues thrown at him. And she's trying her best, but it's just not a role that fits her because she's not just a hanger on. She's not just arm candy.
It's just, it's really upsetting. Like I said, we can get into that more later when we talk about Crystal. But again, she just deserves better.
Ricky Rabies, though, very important to the act because she makes the blood. She makes the blood that squirts out of the disgusting, horrifying drone thing that they fly around the arena and squirt blood at Jack. She makes the blood. So
somebody's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. You got to figure who was doing that for Gangrel? Was it Luna?
No, it was probably just Gangrel. He was doing it for himself.
Poor Gangrel. He's making his own blood. He's losing AEW bookings.
Sorry, buddy.
As we mentioned off the top, we met Tom the King Spade, officially played by David James Elliott, Jack and Ace's father, and the former ace and proprietor of the DWL. And the sense that I think we get from him is that he's a community leader. He kind of knows everyone. Everyone looks up to him. We got that sense from the first episode when Ace was just running down that cashier in the local convenience store. And she said, your father would be ashamed of you. Tom Spade is a respectable man. He's a man that people look up to. He's their hometown hero.
He's still on, you know, the billboard in town, too. So he's clearly someone that the town cares about.
Well, one thing that we know Tom Spade did while he was still alive was sing the jingle for, I don't even know what, do you remember what the business is called? Eddie Earl's business?
I don't actually know what the business is, but
title
isn't it like
pawn.
Title Pawn? Yeah, he's like a pawn shop.
Eddie Earl's Title Pawn. Seeing Jack have to do that for these, you know, these advertisers. You know, they have a banner up in the Duffy Dome and Jack's really just kind of squirming in this little impromptu meeting that he and Willie have with Eddie and Annie Earl. It kind of sucks to have to be like bending over for people like that just because you need the money to, you know, that you need their advertising dollars so you can run your small business. And to see Jack squirm like that and have to sing that jingle, and you know, he just has to swallow so much pride to do it. And I even felt bad for Willie in this situation, which to this point I have not. Eddie and Annie Earl, I'd be interested to see if they come back at all. They were ringside for this show, and it seemed like they were being introduced for a purpose.
Well, Jack wants them to have not just the one, like, banner. He wants them to pay to be all around the ring.
I kind of took that almost as a joke.
I don't know. He needs the money.
Right. He does totally want their money, but I almost took that as him being sarcastic as well.
It's hard to tell.
It is very hard to tell because he's so uncomfortable with the whole thing.
And we know that the DWL can benefit from some more cash.
At this point, they just brought in Ricky Raby, so assumingly they did a good number. And now they have a red hot heel in Ace. So let's transition over to kind of the main story arc of the episode, which is Ace coming back, trying to win the crowd back over, being rejected, and then ultimately accepting his new role. Reluctantly, and not in a healthy way at all for anyone around him or himself, but ultimately doing so.
Yeah, so it hasn't even been, it's been like a week, and he's ready to return to the ring as the ultimate baby face, even though he was just crying because his brother killed him. And you see him practicing his promo. It's the most generic, you know, good conquers evil stuff. He's alluding to the fact that he was double-crossed. Crystal clearly thinks it's lame. She's right. And she basically at some point tells him that he should just be a heel. But he is just dead set on having a triumphant return, even though he never really went anywhere, as this just king of the faces.
That's an important character trait of Crystal, is that at this point we've learned that she's always the smartest person in the room when it comes to these booking decisions.
Yeah, she really knows what she's talking about. And Ace, I don't think Ace even actually like cares about wrestling. I don't think it's really something that matters to him. He's only there because, as we learned in the previous episode, Jack just brought him in after their dad died. Crystal cares about it, so she knows about it. And I think her judgment should be a little more trusted.
Yeah. Ace is there for his own ego and for the glory and for, you know, he's there to be worshipped. And because, quite frankly, he doesn't have anything else to do anyway. He's just hanging out in his mom's house playing video games. He doesn't have anything else to do at this point.
He doesn't even have a day job anymore. Because he was working at like Winn-Dixie or something and got fired.
Yeah, so.
Classic good guy.
The fact that he like cried his way into this role as this red hot heel in the DWL, even above Jack, which at this point it's like, well, does Jack turn face? Are they both heels for a little while and then Jack slowly starts to turn and the crowd slowly wants to see that match with the roles reversed? The problem here is that while Jack is a very selfless and giving heel because he understands his role, Ace is selfish. He is not giving in the ring. He is not giving to his partner. As Rooster mentions, look at those boots, not a scuff on them. He's not a good partner. He's not bumping around for his opponent. It doesn't make his heel opponent look good. He's not giving them the heat that they need. He's just taking all the glory for himself.
Right. And this is why, like, Jack does something so interesting here, because he pretends with Ace. He tells him, you know, yes, you're doing great. Yes, you'll be the good guy. Yes, you're the face. And he's just appearing to be on board with it. But Jack is a liar.
Well, he knows what he has to do to get what he needs, to extract that from Ace.
Right. But he's so sneaky about it that I didn't catch it when we first watched it. It wasn't until the rewatch. When he first gets to the dome, he has a whole box of items that he tells someone to give to the crowd. And it turns out that they're all the things that the crowd is lashing out at Ace with, which I just think is great. It's just so, he's sketchy, but he's so smart.
Well, yeah, at first, the first time we watched it, I thought he was giving that person posters to hand out or flyers or something like that to hang up or whatever. Didn't really catch it. And then at the end, I noticed, oh, wait, that's the same woman that he gives that box to.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, I thought, oh yeah, maybe she's just, you know, she's part of like the street team. She hangs up posters, hands out flyers, and she comes to the shows and she gets really into it. But
right.
What we learn on the rewatch is that, no, he was handing her a box of tissues and she's a plant. So we learn that Jack hires this plant to pass out the tissues. And at a certain point, she starts to go back and forth with Ace while he's cutting his promo. She interrupts him and she's yelling at him. And then she throws a little pack of tissues at him. And then the entire crowd eventually is throwing tissues at him. And this is a moment where Ace completely falls apart, but Jack was expecting him to lash out at everyone. And the heel turn would happen there. So Jack is freaking out that Ace isn't going along with it the way he thought he would. And rightfully so, because now this is even worse. This is even a worse situation. This is an even bigger hole that they are in now. And it's not working. I think the thing about it is Ace was going out there and trying to essentially cut a worked shoot promo and allude right to the fact that Jack betrayed him. Well, the story in kayfabe is that they're having a title match and Jack soundly beat him.
Yeah.
And submitted him. In under a minute.
Made him cry.
What is the betrayal there? So it's essentially a worked shoot promo. So, I mean, that's its own commentary on the concept of the worked shoot in itself. But, and also just the fact that it just is not going along with what your crowd is telling you, which is one of the most important things about wrestling, is that the audience will tell you what they want and what you should be doing. It's not a case where, like, Vince McMahon goes, oh, I tell you what you like. You don't know what you like. That type of thing. You got to listen to your audience. And what the audience is feeding back to you is, that's what it is. That's what you got to go with. And you got to sometimes be adaptable on the fly. And Ace is not that.
Yeah. He cannot adapt. He has this idea of what he's going to be. And when the crowd doesn't want that, He just, like, breaks down and he storms off, you know, which is just, you know, typical good guy behavior, just storming off in a huff because he's just dead set on being a face because his dad was a face. Well, Jack's dad was a face too, but Jack's cool with being a bad guy because that's what works.
I think it's a little bit different for Ace because he's the one who discovered his dad and
right
found his body. So that has an even different effect on him than it does on Jack. So
right,
he feels like he has something to uphold here. He feels like he has something to represent and to portray and to carry on. But it's not what he thinks it is. He is still looking at things from a very surface level view in terms of his dad.
Right. And you have Jack, you know, he had that great line where You know, Ace is like, I'm a face. Dad was a face. You're the heel. And Jack's like, oh, Dad was a face because he was a good guy. He knew you were in the house when he did what he did.
Yeah.
So,
which, like, is huge.
It's huge. He wasn't exactly a good guy.
Committing suicide, shooting yourself when you know that your son is in the house right there and he's going to discover you. I mean, there isn't a good way to do that.
No.
There is no good way to do what he did. But to do it knowing that your son is right there, that is an extra selfish act. And I'm not here to speculate on the mental state of Tom Spade in those final moments. That will be revealed to us, I'm sure, if that is something they intend to do, but it leaves an impact on Ace. And it's something that only after a conversation with Rooster does he feel that he is in a place where he maybe doesn't need to be the face, or that he can't. His back is up against the wall.
Right.
And Rooster is the one who talks some sense into him just by saying, you cried in the ring. No. You cried in the ring. You're done as a face. You gotta go. Like, for now, you're a heel. And eventually he harnesses all of that negative energy and he channels it into a hell of a squash on Bobby Pinn.
Bobby gets some hits in.
And I'm honestly surprised that Ace even sold for him.
That's what's really, really shocking. Because with the entire mindset that Ace is in, you'd think he would just straight up murder Bobby in this match. But he does extend a teensy tiny bit of grace in there. You know, because Bobby doesn't
know anything. Ace of grace.
Because Bobby doesn't know anything. But Bobby did amazing. So there's that. But Ace, when he comes back after the match, everyone's so ecstatic because he did so great. Everybody except Stacy. Everybody is so ecstatic. But Ace, it's black and white for him. He can't just be a character. It can't just be a gimmick. He just is like, oh, I'm a bad guy now. So I'm going to be mean to Crystal. I'm going to call Willie a bitch. I'm just going to be awful to everyone because, Jack, that's what you wanted. He's so stupid.
He doesn't know where the character ends and where he begins. The lines are blurred. He is working the gimmick in the worst way. He's not just, you know, scaring some little kids or something like that, like Jack was doing, or just appearing to be just this like gruff guy that you don't want to approach. He is being verbally abusive to people.
And he's
going to continue hurting people, you would have to assume.
Jack kind of has fun with this bad guy character. And he uses it to have fun outside when he's not in character, I think, you know, as we saw with the kids. But Ace, it's just, he's a disaster. He's a disaster.
And as you mentioned, Stacy is not a fan of it. And let's talk about Stacy in this now, because she's at the Dome. She's at the show, as she usually is. But this time she's with her friends. She has three of her close friends who, they're all single and they're kind of man crazy and they're all just there at the show and they want to touch the wrestlers and they're talking about how hot Jack is and, oh my God, I can't believe that's your husband.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all having a great time, but Stacy's kind of this like stick in the mud, a little bit ashamed or a lot ashamed based on what we saw in the restaurant of the fact that Jack runs the DWL. She calls it, oh, just a rinky dink wrestling show. She tries to downplay Jack's involvement in it. And she's sitting there. She seems very ashamed. She doesn't want to sit too close. She doesn't want to, you know, really engage with them as they're asking her questions. And she looks very disappointed in the booking decision for Ace to turn. What is going on with her?
You know, we said earlier that Jack is getting more and more likable with each episode. I think Stacy's getting more and more unlikable because, first of all, I think it's hilarious that not only do her three supposed best friends know, they don't know anything about wrestling, but they also seem to just know nothing at all about Stacy's life. And I'm sorry, Stacy has to be on Facebook with the rest of them. She's got to be posting something, but she just apparently seems to hate her life. You know, her friends are having a great time. They think wrestling is cool. They tell her she has a really, really cool life after they're at the show. But Stacy is just, I think we said a stick in the mud. She's just ridiculous.
She seems very ashamed that this is what her life is, because this is what her husband's life is. So this has to become everything. And I can understand the frustration of, our entire life revolves around this. We can't go on vacation because of this. This is like an albatross. And I feel like Jack might feel that way too, deep down. But for Stacy, it's like this whole she's ashamed of her husband type of thing.
Yes.
And also now the attitude I feel that she is giving him because she's not happy with what he's making his brother do, which is like, well, why does she care that much about that?
She just kind of makes no sense to me in this episode. She had been like the reasonable and wise one in the first episode, but now she's just, I get it, she's drunk here. But she comes off so incredibly bitter, but she's not doing anything to change her life yet. I mean, she got on a tractor and chugged a beer in episode two.
And shot a squirrel. So it seems like she's just going down the wrong road, actually.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because I want to like her. As one of like the few, you know, main women in this kind of scene. I mean, she's not involved in the wrestling aspect of things, but
she doesn't want to just be a coupon clipper and a church choir singer and the wife of Jack Spade. She wants to travel. She wants to see the world. She wants to go to Machu Picchu. Ooh, Machu Picchu, as Kramer would say.
Well, this is why I'd love to know, how did she and Jack get together in the first place? Because he seems like he's been very involved in the wrestling scene from the start, from the get-go. So surely she would have known that this is what he's up to. I mean, she's college educated, or maybe she dropped out. I don't know the situation, but they mentioned, you know, the sorority. She went to college. Jack's just a lawnmower salesman. So what could she do? And how did she end up here with him? Is she from Duffy? She doesn't appear to have any like family there.
Right.
Where does she come from?
Hopefully we'll get that a little bit more fleshed out in future episodes this season. More context for how they met, their marriage, their relationship in general, and also where Stacy comes from and really what she's about, because we're getting more revealed to us now, but we're at the point where it's frustrating because we don't have all the information. Maybe some more context would put her in a little bit of a better light here. But I think she has a similarity to Crystal in that she feels that she wants more than whatever this is, which is a trait that Jack has, and that's something that he says. He doesn't want the normal life, and he feels that there's probably something beyond all of this for him. And Crystal definitely as well feels that she is just worth more than what she has been given so far. And we talked about how Vicky Rabies is kind of mentoring her while, you know, during the course of this booking, she's kind of there to say, hey, yeah, keep your man happy, rub his shoulders. He'll take you to the top. He'll take you with him anywhere he goes. And honestly, that's really bad advice for Crystal, because Crystal is unfortunately tied to Ace. And we know that Ace doesn't give a shit about anyone around him. Ace is very selfish. So all of this kind of just backfires on her.
Yeah, because at the end, you know, when he finally turns heel, you know, she was cheering him on as the valet. When they get back to the back, she's trying to congratulate him. And he's like, I'm not your boyfriend. How many times do I have to say this until it gets through to you? And it's like, you've been using her for the past two episodes. She's there for you all the time. She saved your ass when you were out drunk, karaokeing, being a whole mess. And this is how you treat her? She doesn't need him to get to the top. She doesn't need him to go anywhere. She needs to be able to do that on her own. And she has the ability and the talent to do that. It's just a matter of having someone finally give her that opportunity, which in the DWL seems impossible because women don't belong here.
You know, if they're not in a relationship, Ace sure does like the sex that they have.
Right.
Because they have a lot of it.
Right.
I guess it's just what's available to him at the moment. And he's one of those guys where he'll just take it wherever he gets it. I guess he's not going to turn it down. He's not going to turn down someone rubbing oil on him before his match. He's not going to turn down, you know, being babied, basically, because
right.
that's what his mom does for him. And that's kind of what Crystal has to do. But Crystal cannot not put her foot down after this. This is
yes.
the last straw, I feel.
With every episode, I'm like, Crystal, come on. You can't take this from him anymore. I was like that after the first episode. But for some reason, I mean, I know she's tied to him professionally, but surely we can put her with somebody else in Duffy.
This episode was definitely really triggering for the Crystal Defense Squad. I feel that we are just on edge, really, going into episode 4. So
she just, I keep saying this, but she just deserves so much better. And you have that scene of her at the end, just like, after the show, she's still in her not gear, whatever. Is it gear? Is it gear she's wearing? I don't know. Whatever she's wearing.
it's like a little skirt thing, whatever. I don't know.
It's her valet
uniform. It's what she's got to work with.
She's in her kitchen just like drinking a beer. And I'm like, girl, this has to be your, you know, let's contemplate. Let's think about how we cannot let this dumb man keep doing this to you. Please stand up for yourself. Do it. I need it in the next episode.
Well, speaking of people who deserve better, another story in this episode that we saw kind of start to come to a boiling point was Rooster wanting to get a push, wanting to be in the main event scene. And Rooster in this episode, I feel, shows a lot of really necessary frustration. Because when you're all smiles and you're the guy who makes everyone laugh and you're just really entertaining and you go out there and you kill it every night, but you don't speak up, you're not necessarily going to get that push that you feel you deserve and that you do deserve. So the fact that he does confront Jack about it in this episode, I feel is a really important step for him, but it falls largely on unwilling ears because Jack is just too focused on everything else going on. He's booking Ricky Rabies. Mm-hmm. He's got this whole situation with Ace going on. So it's kind of a thing where, oh yeah, you're great, but wait your turn.
Right. And Rooster, in his conversation with Ace, it's clear that he has been waiting his turn for a very long time. He says he basically moonsaulted out of the womb. You know, he's been in so many different promotions. And every promotion he's been in, he's never been champion. He was a prodigy. Now he's a vet. And
yeah.
He doesn't have a belt to show for it.
And nothing in between. And it's weird how some wrestlers, yeah, that just happens where mm-hmm. they're this young upstart. They have all this potential, blue chipper. And then all of a sudden, yeah, they've been in the business for like 10, 15 years. And yeah, they're still kind of mid-carding it out. And yeah, there's really no upward momentum going on. I think of a guy like Cesaro, who just from the word go was just so good. So good on the indies. And then he gets to WWE and you're like, oh, well, this is a guy that they can really build around. He's got a great look. He's very tall. He has a weird charisma about him that may not be Vince McMahon's cup of tea, but people get behind him and love him. And he's just kind of toiled away on the mid-card. And he's had a few opportunities here and there, but never anything sustained because he's not that guy. And a guy like Rooster is kind of pigeonholed in that spot. And it's very clear to him that there is no upward movement for me here when you have people just leapfrogging you in line like Ace, who will just come in and immediately be in the main event. You know, veterans like Ricky Rabies, if Jack is relying too much on people like them, where do I fit in? And what really got me here is that Jack used some of the buzzwords that you hear a lot, especially on like commentary, about Black wrestlers, the ways that they'll be described as, oh, just so athletic and just a great athlete. Like, he stopped just short of saying the he's a great athlete of that trope. He said words like, oh, you have personality and a natural grace and a raw talent. And he basically did everything but call him the best pure athlete in the DWL, like a very Jim Ross type of line. Mm-hmm. And those are definite buzzwords that are thrown about Black wrestlers. It's not just, this is a great wrestler, this is a future main eventer. It's, oh, he's a great athlete. And that's kind of a coded language that I don't even know if the people who say these things realize what they're saying. But talk to a Black wrestler about it. This is a real thing. And Rooster's experience, not only here, but in other promotions in Georgia, as you mentioned, has been that, being pigeonholed, being kind of held down. And this is a guy who all he needs is the right platform and the right push or any opportunity to break out and have some sort of sustained momentum. That is something I am very, very excited to see what happens with Rooster, where the story goes. Does he go somewhere else? Does he try to get booked on another show and say, hey, look at what I just did here. This is what you've had under your nose all along. I desperately want that for him.
I think out of all of the wrestlers here in the DWL, he's probably the most likely to end up going down to Florida, going with Charlie Gulley, because he was mentioning it in the last episode, you know, about how Charlie Gulley might treat him better. So maybe we'll see Rooster and Crystal break out and go down to Florida.
You know, speaking of Charlie Gulley, there was a distinct lack of Charlie Gulley in this episode, which I feel is, it's only sin because I really did enjoy this one a lot, but it was kind of a mess in points. And
yes,
a good type of mess, but a bad type of mess. An example of a bad type of mess would be Wild Bill in this episode. Do you want to?
Yeah.
Do you want to take that away and take us down to the corner of this podcast that we call Wild Style, the Wild Bill Fashion Report?
My man's struggling. Granted, I think he brings this on himself, but this is again nudity, the plain edition.
See, I'm very disappointed that he wasn't clothed, so we could call this one Snakeskin on a Plane.
he's wearing clothes later. But so this time, I guess he decided to get naked on a plane while he was drunk. It's a disaster. Everything about this is a disaster.
It's a very plane ride from hell type of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I think after the Dark Side of the Ring episode comes out, a lot of people might put that together.
So, again, you know, if we're talking about looks, this is another one-star look, but only because he's wearing his hat and because I didn't have to see his butt. But he does, we see him again, and he's wearing a white shirt and a black vest. This is better, much better than him being naked, because I don't need to see that ever again. So I'll give this one a 5 out of 10 stars. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here because he's basically screwed his entire life up. You got to imagine that up north, they're not going to take this. He's gone viral as a disaster. He's a mess. He's come back. Willie has to take him in.
Yeah. And when she does, he's kind of looking like a mix between like late Randy Savage and Dutch Mantel. So shout out to Laura Bauer for the great costume design and wardrobe throughout these episodes. But we cannot wait to see some more Wild Bill looks.
Chris Bauer just heat.
And less Gone Wild Bill.
less naked Bill. More snakeskin.
No more naked cowboy, please. But I think we're nearing the end here, so are there any final thoughts that you have about this episode overall?
I think it's just, again, like I said earlier, it just started on such a depressing note that I did kind of struggle to really get into it. Not to say it's a bad episode. There's, you know, I still liked it. It was just a struggle because I think I just wasn't in a good mindset after that. But the same thing with Young Rock. I love everything that the wrestlers are doing. Those are some of my favorite moments, my favorite spots. And while I'm liking Jack a little more with each episode, I'm really waiting for him to screw everything up.
Okay, well, we shall see. I agree, this one did disturb me in the beginning, but I think it did a good job of grabbing me immediately after that. And everything else I was able to really enjoy mm-hmm. and, you know, be there for. But it ended on a somber note as well. But, you know, all that happened in between was a lot of fun for me. So I thoroughly sure. enjoyed this. Like I said, I thought this was the best episode yet. I thought it was the strongest so far of the three. One small detail that kind of bothered me about this episode, though, and this is the absolute smallest of small deals, is that like a small regional indie promotion probably wouldn't have a ring crew.
Yeah.
It'd be the roster setting up and tearing down the ring. And that's one of the things where I feel like there are certain disconnects in this show about what a promotion at this level would and would not have or would and would not do. And that was one of them that I thought was a little bit funny. It's like, oh yeah, sure. They're paying ring crew. No. You get that locker room out there and they're setting up and tearing down the ring. They're setting up the chairs. They're handing out posters. They're selling their own merch. That's the reality of a small regional or independent wrestling promotion, even today.
The only way this would make sense to me, because there's no way, they don't have the money to be paying these guys. So the only way this would make sense to me is if these are like friends
volunteer
or
fans.
Family members. Yeah, volunteer fans, something like that. Because they don't, he's already spending money on, you know, the smoke machines, the large cutouts of Ace's face crying. He doesn't have the money for
this. Oh, you think that was a plant as well? You think he planted that in the crowd?
Oh, yeah. That was definitely in that box with the tissues. There's no way that people came prepared with that. I don't believe that people
I don't
came.
Know. No, fans are pretty savvy these days.
I think he did that.
Oh, boy. Well, as we see things like that are kind of like, would it be like that? We will continue to point them out. But as I've mentioned, it is not a big deal at all. And anyone who would hold it against a show like this for being inaccurate, I think, is kind of a giant dork to be like, oh, this show is stupid. This wouldn't happen. Any sort of show about a real life thing is going to have inaccuracies. But I think what is more impressive is how much they do get right about the wrestling business, especially like Southern regional wrestling.
Yeah.
It's pretty astounding how good of a job they do. So again, our hats off to this show, our snakeskin cowboy hats off to them. And that's going to do it for this episode of Pro Wrestling Repackaged. Thank you so much for listening. And I would just like to ask each and every one of you listening, if you do enjoy what we're doing here, please not only subscribe, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or any other platform that supports ratings and reviews, but please also follow us on Twitter and Instagram and interact with us. Let us know what you're thinking about heels. You know, we know that there is an active community for this show, much more so than Young Rock, and we'd really love to be a part of the discussion with you. So you can tweet us or send us a comment or message on Instagram at PWRepackaged, and you can email us at PWRepackaged@gmail.com. And hey, if you send us some thoughts, you send us an email, you let us know what you're thinking of the show, of Heels, or of this show, we'll read it on the episode. So please do reach out to us. We would really appreciate it. And please do join us next time as we discuss Season 1, Episode 4 of Heels.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PWRepackaged and email us at PWRepackaged@gmail.com.
Subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or your favorite podcast app. And visit pwrepackaged.crd.co for links to everything.
If you'd like to support the show, please consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or any other platform that features reviews.
Pro Wrestling Repackaged is a Multitrack Minds production. Visit multitrackminds.com for projects and audio production services by yours truly.